Yo, it's NDL game day. The biggest matchup, bonus calls, and the hottest takes in virtual college football. Let's get it. It's Saturday, the lights are bright. NDL game day, we taking flight. Lick bringing heat, phonies on the grind. Penguins got the playbook, blowing your mind. Arby's calling shots, Mark's breaking it down. Petty D's got the fire that'll shake the whole town. Who's the champ? Who's taking the L? Game day vibes, it's a show you can't miss. No sell. It's NTL. They play bold claims. Who gon' tell? Game day's here, bring the energy, hype. The lead line is right here on the mic.
Palm high, the rip currents that are churning across college football. Titanic clashes will chart the course of the second half of the season here, and none are bigger than on the banks of the Ouachita River. The Cajuns ride into Malone Stadium, but Ace the Warhawk believes that with high ground that the Warhawks will be on the hill, because there's anger, resentment, and frustration, absolute hate that has been festered for 15 years, and it's erupting. And they're confident that they're going to take down these Cajuns. It's football time here in Louisiana. And I'm here with Phony, Penguin, Vegas, and a special guest, Barkley. Man, I'm excited to be on the Game Day Show. I'm excited to have these guests with us today. First off, we're going to jump right in it. We're going to introduce Vegas here and talk about last week matchup where Baylor was on the ropes against West Virginia. Vegas, how are you doing today?
What is up, Lick? It is a pleasure to be here. Listen, sometimes you just gotta rally the troops, man. You gotta get on that hill and you gotta stand on it and you gotta keep pushing. And that's what we had to do. We were facing the pesky Mountaineers. That was their season, and they came out between Green, their big time wide receiver, their offensive line that literally are behemoths. And they gave us all we could handle, but thankfully the EA gods would not strike down upon us, and we fought through and came out with the dub.
Got to talk about leading up to that. Obviously, when you I know we talked about it before the show about, you know, people call them trap games, things like that, where you don't necessarily, maybe the game planning isn't the same as maybe a team such as like Iowa State or Kansas or anything like that. And sometimes these games are plugged in, and they're games where us in the media, a lot of times we don't even talk about them. We're like, yeah, it looks like they're going to go 4-0, 4-1. How does that play into the factor when you line up and you're playing these games?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this, is that we don't ever not take a game seriously. That being said, I've never watched West Virginia play. I've never watched a single second of tape, and you know, outside of when there was a former coach there, you know, no offense, that it wasn't on our radar. And you come out looking to play serious ball and protect it and do the things you need to, and you get caught off guard sometimes, and hence it becomes a little bit of a struggle. And that's what this game was. It simply was that. Their team came out, they played hard, they made some big plays, did not turn it over at all. Which has really been the staple of our defense, and we had to fight and claw. So, yeah, I mean, you could say trap game. You could say a lot of different things. It was what I'll say is this. It was a hurdle, and it was one of the toughest games I've played in NDL, and it was against an 0-9 at the time West Virginia lone-coached Mountaineer team. And I know this. My boys are ready for this block six. And we're looking forward to what the future holds as the regular season comes to an end.
Vegas, I had a quick question there. Vegas, Penguin here. What would you say to those who think that Jaheim White running over, around, through, and past your defense showed a weak and a way for other playoff contenders to exploit you? What would you say to that?
Well, I would just simply say I want you to go back and I want you to look at the Iowa State game. I want you to go back and look at the Colorado game. And I want you to go back and I want you to look consistently week in and week out, with the exception of another kind of a letdown game where we played BGSU, where we just didn't really play great defense. We've really contained it. We went out there, Taj Brooks for Texas Tech again, a guy that has literally been, you know, running through people. Yeah, he had 100 some odd yards, but he got 60 plus of them on one carry. And so this is what I'll tell you, is that we definitely play a gap heavy defense. Sometimes if you're able to break through that initial line of defense, you can make some big plays. We're not big up front. We are definitely a little smaller, a little faster. And West Virginia had some hogs, as they may say, and made some space. Listen, when you don't make big plays defensively, it's hard to win. But you know what? We still won.
When you we talk about defense and stuff like that, obviously the last two games, I think you would probably be on the same page, as just for face value looking at the box score. It does look like, you know, teams are able to score a few more points. Obviously, you've come out with victories in both of those games, so it's really a moot point when we talk about, I mean, you just got to go out and win the game. Sometimes it isn't pretty and it isn't ugly. On the defensive side of things, though, I do notice, you know, you have Lorando Johnson and Tayshawn Wilson kind of on that back end. I mean, really, your secondary has played really well this year. What are some expectations and adjustments maybe you're doing with the front seven going into play a pass-heavy Houston, but then also Kansas, who's a pretty balanced team this year and last year, obviously. What are some adjustments you're making in the front seven?
Well, what I'll say is this. First off, you know, you look at the game against TCU where we gave up 34. That game was ugly early, and TCU fought and clawed their way back and made it interesting as the game went on, as we just really tried not to give it away, but we jumped down their throats, and so they kind of had to be forced to throw a little bit more. What I'll say is this, is that, you know, again, we are not very ratings heavy here at Baylor. I want to say our highest rated player maybe an 82 on the entire team. So I want everyone to keep that in mind of what we're working with here. Where we make up for it is scheme, and where we make up for it is speed. And what we're looking to do, especially on the back end, is we want you to test us. And sometimes you'll make plays and sometimes you won't. And there's plenty of videos out there of guys leaping backwards and jumping sideways and either making the play or just barely missing it. What I'll say is this, is Houston is next in line for what the league deserves, which is hopefully a number one versus number two matchup in week 14 against the Jiggy J Rod Kansas Jayhawks. But that game against Kansas, as was shown in the last block against Iowa State, is not going to be one in the secondary. It's definitely going to be one, like you said, in the front seven. And that's just going to be gap control. It's going to be tackling, and it's going to be QB, not necessarily contain, but QB awareness. And what I mean by that is not allowing Jalen Daniels to be able to step up into the pocket and run freely. Will really be the what we're looking for. So we're going to continue to look for Linton and Randolph holding down the edges, kind of continue to rotate our D tackles in there between Noel and Maieve, and we'll see what happens. We've got plenty of speed at linebacker. Probably not going to be a big game for Mr. Matt Jones, who is our impact middle linebacker, as his 80 speed kind of takes him off the field against fast quarterbacks. But we are looking for Jeremy Evans to really step up in that starting middle linebacker role in his 89-90 speed.
Yeah, Vegas is phony over here. Got one question. So leading off of that, right, talking about this big Kansas matchup that you have coming up, big game for y'all in the Baylor Bears. Is this a game, well, before that game, you got Houston, right? Is the game against Houston a game that you're overlooking? Maybe possibly a game like West Virginia, or is this something that y'all got all your focus on and you're prepared for it? And how do you prepare for that game, especially going into a game like Kansas?
So what I'll tell you is this, is not to not to sound out of pocket here, but I feel bad for the Houston Cougars because that is the single most important game, believe it or not. And the reason I say that is at 11-0 going at Kansas against the most likely number one ranked team in the nation, win or lose week 14, the Baylor Bears should have a ticket to the college football playoff. And so there is zero chance. I think week 12 was the spot where we could have got caught a little bit. After that scare, we are going to play at home against the Cougs. And it's not often we put the pedal to the metal, if you know what I mean. You don't see a lot of 35-point wins on our roster, on our schedule. That is deliberate, as it's a sign of respect for our people out there. Plus, you never know when people get in their feelings. But as a wise man once said, we're going to go for the 4-4-4 strat here, and we're going to be up four scores in the fourth quarter with 4 minutes to go before we take the pedal off the metal.
I think you hit it there right on the head there. I just posted it in the chat here, is that really at the end of the day, when you're in that Power Four conference, a win is a win. It doesn't really matter how ugly it is at the end of the year. It really is the body of work. If you're putting the wins together, it doesn't matter. You don't have to evaluate the losses. You kind of answered, the big question that I think a lot of us had was, did this kind of refocus the team, which it sounds like it did, and refocused it to more of that the next game up instead of kind of looking ahead, which is easy to do. I'm sure most of you guys know the big game day announcement, back-to-back weeks. We're here in Monroe this week, and next week we'll be traveling to Kansas for that Baylor versus Kansas matchup, which will decide, potentially decide that Big 12 regular season champion. Next up, we kind of want to talk about, we do have another coach on the show today, Coach Barkley, coach out of ULM, Louisiana Monroe, the Warhawks, coming from the Sun Belt Conference. We've mentioned this conference a couple times on the show, really where we believed it was super West heavy. You have Troy, Louisiana Raging Cajuns, and Louisiana Monroe. Out of those three teams, you're looking at a 19-3 record between those two teams. But then you go up to the East, where you have Marshall, Thundering Herd, who have come on of late, but they're 4-5. And then you have Appalachian State sitting at 4-4. So the conference is kind of wide open there, definitely on the east and the west side. But we'll introduce Coach Barkley here, coach of the Louisiana Monroe Warhawks. How are you doing today, Coach?
Coach, thank you so much. I'm excited. I appreciate your opportunity for having me. I'm Coach Barkley, ULM Monroe Warhawks coach. We're excited today, Coach, and I'm going to tell you why. It's a great day for football. The weather is great. The student section has came out today. The fans are excited. The band is playing. And it's rivalry week for the Louisiana Monroe Warhawks. So we're excited. We're playing against a program that's actually physical, that's hard-nosed, is coached well, and they score points. So we're looking forward to the opportunity, and go Warhawks.
Coach Barkley, Penguin here. It's widely stated that you have some of the best alternate uniforms in the game at your disposal, but also people say that you have one of the best names in the game at your disposal. And why is General Booty such a fantastic player?
That's a great question. Going into this year, there was a quarterback competition with Armenta and Booty, like you mentioned. And he played well. Looking at him through practice, he came in first guy in, last guy out, really connecting with the receivers, getting the chemistry and the playbook and what we wanted to do here, at this regime. He's led well. He's obviously has drawn some attention because of his name, but nonetheless, he's stayed level-headed, and that's what I like about him the most. The kid's great, even off the field in his studies. I mean, he's just an all-around great kid. So with him being General Booty, I guess he's leading the charge, and he's just been doing great at that, and we're glad to have him.
Well, some of the expectations that you probably have this season when you guys are starting, that we talk about gaining momentum, with basically Louisiana's Raging Cajuns, they're ranked popping into that top 25, no doubt, with the new rankings released tomorrow, will probably go up, and even the potential that the Warhawks may be ranked in that top 25. How have you been able to handle kind of getting into that spotlight now as a coach for the Warhawks, as well as just national attention?
You know, honestly, it's just a mindset. Coming into, you know, this year, we knew that the expectations were very low for our program. And, you know, we believed in the players and the players believed in us and in the message. And coming into going against Troy, a very great team, a very great opponent and hard-nosed as well. And being able to pull up that upset was just something of a start that we showed these kids that what we wanted to try to do for the remainder of the season. And one thing about, you know, a coach like myself, I try to get the kids to believe in what we're doing, and they're the ones that's got to execute, and I've just been so proud of them. So, you know, we just take it one game at a time. Every opponent has just been great in this conference. Every opponent is, you know, somebody who, you know, definitely could be at the top of the standings every week. So it's just week in, week out that we've been looking at it. And we just have a goal in mind, and the goal is just to put, you know, the expectation of UL and Monroe back on the map.
Yeah, Barclay, leading off of that, right? So first season here in the NDL, correct? And with you taking over the Louisiana Monroe Warhawks, what was kind of, how has your first experience been in the NDL with a team like this? And what was your goals kind of that you had set out for yourself coming into this season?
Well, you know, looking at the team, I definitely recognize a lot of the deficiencies that we had, some in the secondary, some in the offensive line, and some, you know, kind of in the back end of our defense. But what, you know, what we wanted to try to do is, you know, scheme around these guys and simplify what we wanted to do to these guys to make sure that they can execute effectively and fast. You know, we wanted to bring a fast, hard-nosed, physical team, a team that, you know, had some swagger, a team that, you know, can innovate, and a team, most importantly, that can finish in the fourth quarter. So, you know, it's fortunate for us that, you know, it translated well to these kids. You know, we have had some close games. We had, you know, some games that's been in our favor, but, you know, they're all the same. That's just a nature of this league. Every opponent is different. Every coach is good, and every team is good. So we just try to make sure we stick to what we do.
Coach Barclay, Penguin again here. It's a lot of people say it's going to be a very close matchup for y'all with Louisiana today. What would be one key area of position battles that you think is essential for you to win today to come away with the W?
Oh, it's definitely going to be in the trenches. These guys, you know, they are definitely very balanced, and, you know, they're a team that if you sleep, they'll go over the top. So, you know, we have a lot of respect for them, a lot of respect for Coach Doof as well. We just try to stay solid into what we do. They do score a lot of points. However, you know, we're one of the top defensive teams in the league, and we kind of stand on that. When it comes to points against, we try to make sure that a lot of our opponents don't get a chance. And, you know, time of possession is always key for us. So we feel if, you know, we control the ball and, you know, limit the turnovers and the possession for the other team, I think we'll have a good chance.
Yeah, Barclay. So with the team, a game like this, right, game of caliber like this, going into a ranked Louisiana team, how do you make sure your players are prepared for a big game on the road like this?
You know, it's kind of hard for, you know, to fight distractions, and I just try to make sure I gathered the team earlier this week and just told them to, you know, limit their phone usage and, you know, stick to the message, stick to the plan, and going into this game and treat it the same as we have. As always, we understand this is a big week for us. You know, it's around campus. You can see the fans. They're ready to see a good show, and rightfully so. And we just want to make sure that we play to our game, stay consistent, to our offense, stay consistent to our defensive plan, and make sure that our linebackers are, you know, getting good blocks and good sheds. Our cornerbacks are making sure that they're, you know, knowing their assignments. You know, everybody's on the same page. And most importantly, coaching is important. So all of our coaches, you know, we met earlier and I talked to them just about assignments. Assignment is going to be key this matchup, and hopefully, you know, it translated to this game for W.
Yeah, Coach, go ahead.
I'd say that's really good stuff, Coach Barkley. As part of this getting set up for today, it sounds like your team's locked in. What would the pregame meal be today before y'all take the field?
We're going to go ahead and go some steak and potatoes, and we're going to go ahead and with some biscuits on the side, and I want these boys to have a good meal today, nice and ready, have a lot of energy, and we're going to see if they have some good fuel for these boys. Thanks.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on the show, Coach. I know we're excited. You'll be playing ULM. The plan, I think, is for you guys to play a little bit later, or shortly after the show today. I know Coach Doof, you know, he's getting his team ready and stuff, and the big travel down to Monroe. Just a little bit of talking about the battle on the Bayou. You know, that's the rivalry between these two teams. Obviously, the stakes could never be higher when there is the potential for that college football playoff, you know, that people are talking about. If they are to run the table, do they get in, do they get out? I think, you know, we could probably make an argument they're in, and then you could probably make an argument they're out. They played 59 times against each other. Right now, the Raging Cajuns hold a 32-26 edge. But when you really think about it, I mean, it's been fairly dominant for Louisiana Raging Cajuns. I think ULM's won three times in the last 15 meetings. In the last, you know, three or four meetings, they've been extremely lopsided, including a 70-20 drumming back in 2020. So obviously this has a lot of implications both for the Sun Belt and the college football playoff. We want to jump right into the college football playoff release. Came out last week on Monday. A new one will release this Monday. We've already had some shakeup, as you can tell. You'll see Memphis on there as well as Cincy. I think both those teams are going to fall out of the playoff picture right now. Obviously, there's lots of football to still be played. What are your guys' thoughts on Memphis? Are they going to be able to let's talk about the college football reaction first. Who wants to talk about what they see as a surprise and not a surprise?
So, yeah, I'll jump in here. So when we talk about the Memphis, right, they had it laid out in front of them. And all they had to do was just went out, secure their chance in the conference championship. And even maybe with a loss, they still might have made the playoffs, right? But when they went to Rice and lost in shocking fashion, not even a close loss or anything, that I feel like that just knocks them out and possibly anybody else that's in that conference as well. Because you look at Memphis, they're second down there in the AAC, one loss. They also got Tulane coming up. UMass is another game they've got as well. But I don't really see a path for another AAC team to make it at all. But a team that out of the AAC that you might be able to say that makes it is maybe UAB, possibly, you could say. But they haven't really had a strength of schedule to kind of show for it. So my guess is with that Memphis loss, I don't see an AAC team. You could see a Mountain West team or a Sun Belt team possibly take that spot instead now. So leaves it wide open for the rest of the other G5 conferences.
Well, what I see when I look at this is that currently it's the world belongs to the SEC and the Big 12, and the rest of us are just living in it. You've got multiple representatives and legit title contenders from both those conferences. With really just, I mean, you got to look, the ACC and the Big Ten are just kind of barely holding on at this moment. Both those conferences, I think you're going to see at least one of them excluded. And you're probably going to have, even with a team like Memphis stumbling, you're going to have a couple, I think, smaller schools sneak in there, like San Diego State's likely to take a spot. And I think there's a decent chance that the winner of our game today between the Warhawks and the Cajuns could claim one of those spots as well.
I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Vegas.
Yeah, I was just gonna just speak really quickly on the CFP, right? So, like, the biggest thing everyone needs to remember, and you guys did a great job on PTI earlier this week, is that there's a lot of games left to be played. There's some schedules that are a little back heavy due to rivalries and things along those lines. There's things that are going to work themselves out. I know we're going to do a little bit more in depth here shortly, and so we're not going to divulge too much information, but sometimes you just need to let things play out, right? Hypothetically, anything can happen, but let things play out, work their way through, and you're going to see the cream of the crop rise to the top, baby. And that's it. And those that can't stand the heat will get out of the kitchen. And there are some fake teams currently listed in our top 25. There are some, you know, coaches out there that make mistakes and make errors and things happen when in putting, rankings. But in the end, we need to continue to dissect the information, work through the process. The CFP committee is only going to get better for the first time through with a lot of teams not played. Only thing I'm going to share is I'm not going to dive too much into what the predictions are right now, but I think that as the year goes on, especially through this next block, you're going to really see the separation and maybe a little bit of a correction in regards to some quality wins and really bad losses that the CFP should take into account.
I think
it's a good point.
Yeah, everyone brought up the point that there's still a lot of football to be played. Some teams have just a couple games, some teams have four or five games, and it's always evident every single season in the NDL. It doesn't matter how you do out of conference, how you start the season in that first half. It's always the second half where you start tripping up. You have I just use South Carolina as an instance. You know, we had them pegged to finish that regular season undefeated. Then they go in and they squeak out a win last night, or it was the other night. But then, and they end up tripping up and losing, which really shakes up that SEC conference for who's going to play in that championship game with 3 1-loss teams right now. But it always kind of plays itself out, like with the Memphis thing. Them losing couldn't have been a bigger thing for the ACC. You had Wyoming, who went in and upset Colorado State. And so that also shook up, and that shook up things and allowed the ACC, and we'll get to them later, but it allowed them to re-enter the playoff picture with maybe possible multiple teams, depending on how that plays out. And so it's really exciting these last couple weeks. How everything will shake out, because we have really big in-conference matchups for these mid-major teams. And then obviously the conference championship for those games could decide a college football playoff. I mean, that's really a playoff game in sense, which is my favorite part about the new playoff, the college football playoff, is that these conference championships games can become playoff football games. You win and you're in, you lose and you're out, which is exciting as a college football fan. And we'll continue to keep talking about a college football playoff potential team. It's Memphis. Is Memphis able, I know we kind of hit on it already, are they able to bounce back, win their conference and play in a championship? But how are they going to bounce back now with two losses and sit in second place in that conference right now?
I don't think they can, right? Like, I mean, you lose to Rice, and not just lose. You get pounded, right? Like it was a beating on the front seven with a big running back who just ran it down their throats. And you look at it, and then you say, well, let's just say Memphis does win out the rest of the way. Again, Rice still actually has a backdoor way into the conference championship. I think they have the one loss. They now have the tiebreaker over Memphis. UAB is still in the outlier. You're going to get a rematch of some sort there. Does Memphis get enough credit
than for maybe beating Rice in the conference championship or beating UAB again. Like, they'd have to win out, win the conference, beat a team they've already played, and then do it convincingly. To me, that's a hard sell, right? Like, that's just a hard sell for two losses in a non-P4 conference. But who the hell am I?
I think you kind of nail it there. I really do. I think there's just, it's not impossible, but there's too many chips that got to fall in the right way to give them even the opportunity to get back into it. The odds are just too long.
And I think something you can also look at is that, I mean, eventually you have to put these mid-majors against each other, right? You're gonna say is a one loss less SDSU team, are they better than a two loss AAC team? Because or Sun Belt, you're gonna bring up the Sun Belt and maybe the AAC conference. Well, the Sun Belt, Louisiana Raging Cajuns have played UAB. They played Temple. They beat them both, right? Temple sits at 3-0 in the conference. They obviously got a lot of games to play. But, I mean, for face value, a two-loss Memphis team isn't going to get in over a Louisiana Raging Cajun team that is able to run the table or even lose just one game. And I'm not saying that you would put in Louisiana, but I just don't see how I really don't see an AAC team making it, and the reason being is that even if someone runs the table in that conference, you're sitting at two losses. I think that you would have to have the Mountain West eat each other up and have a three-loss team pop out of there, or the Sun Belt do the same thing and have a two- or a three-loss team. I just don't see how you're going to take a two-loss AAC team over those two because of those in-season matchups that they had against each other, and they weren't able to win those games. Obviously we talk about that all the time. At some point you just have to win football games. And the common denominator is that conference hasn't been able to beat the Sun Belt. So go ahead.
Oh, I was going to go quick something. It's going to be hard for that ACC. They're going to have to just have so many dominoes to fall their way. And even if that happens, it's just still tough. I think Memphis was their last draw, and they would have just had to run the table. So, yeah, pretty good top points that y'all made there.
I mean, you look at the AAC, and you can just look at their strength of schedule. Their top five teams in that conference all have a below 500 opponent record. I think they only have like three teams in that conference that have played people above 500 in that whole conference, which is one of the worst strength of schedule conferences in the nation, is the AAC. And so we'll keep on moving here with our topics here. The next one is going to be, does the Big 12 get four teams in the college football playoff? I'll start it off. Just talking about the Big 12 in general. Obviously, we have Coach for Baylor on here, Vegas. Where we sit atop of that Big 12 conference. Just to go over the standings a little bit. You have Baylor at one right now with 7 wins. Kansas at 2, 7 wins in conference. You have Cincinnati at 6-1. Colorado at 5-2. Iowa State at 5-2, and Arizona at 5-2. Obviously, we talked last week about poor Pat. Stumbling down here towards late in the season. He's got 3 losses. And so you really have, you're looking at 5 teams there that are sitting up there with a chance to play in the college football playoff because a couple of these teams do play each other at the end of the season. Does anyone like the chances that they get 4 teams in?
So, Absolutely. I think it's going to happen. I think the only way it doesn't happen is if somehow Kansas implodes and loses a couple games and then stuff gets weird. But otherwise, I think Kansas and Baylor are both in today. I think they're both going to get in there. And I think Cincinnati and Iowa State get in. I think, unfortunately, Colorado takes an L to Kansas, and that third loss keeps them out. But I think a 2-loss team from the Big 12, you got to put him in.
Yeah, I'm going to go off that. I think when we're looking at the Big 12, right, a lot of really good teams in there. I think I think they're solidified in getting 4 teams in, but why don't we start talking maybe about 5 teams, right? Like, Is that a possibility? Because what if Colorado beats Kansas, and what if Kansas beats Baylor? Could you see five teams making this?
Yeah, I think this is what I'll say. If Kansas loses to Colorado and beats Baylor, that's going to give you a lot of 10-2 teams or 11-1 teams, right? And at that point, you have to start looking a little bit ahead. So you get Cincinnati that beat Colorado, but who's Cincinnati's big win? Colorado, right? You then look at Iowa State. Who's their big win, right? Iowa State, Colorado.
Right?
Give Iowa their only loss of the season.
But which is the other side, right? So now it's important for Iowa, who we've got coming up in a big game, right, to make sure they do what they're supposed to do to uphold that. Where I think you're spot on. I think if you actually were to play out the scenario you just played, I actually think it's actually Cincinnati that falls completely back, and you give the nod to Colorado, Iowa State, Baylor, and Kansas. I don't think you can get more than four. I think four is the hard cutoff. Even in the SEC, I think once you get more than four, there things get really broken somewhere, and there's definitely some big bias. Now, could Colorado somehow make the college football playoff, Big 12 championship, and then maybe beat Cincinnati in a rematch, depending on how all the chips fall? I don't know, right? Or even Baylor, if Baylor loses, but then Kansas lost in the tiebreakers because it's a hot damn mess. The interesting part is, without a three-loss Big 12 champion, which I just don't think is going to happen, it's going to be very difficult to get five teams anywhere. And I think that goes for the SEC as well.
Yeah, I think one of the things, I mean, from my standpoint, is that I'm going to say no, and I'll tell you why. I think they get three teams, and that's because I don't think Colorado's going to beat Kansas. What's going to happen is, I think the playoff committee is going to look. They're going to see Baylor, Kansas, Cincinnati, and Iowa State. That's what they're going to see, right? They're going to take those four teams and they're going to look at them. It's not going to take long before they look at Kansas. They look at Cincinnati, right? You're talking about a Cincinnati team that lost to Iowa State. So I think that you're going to have Kansas as that fourth team or Cincinnati as the fourth team on the way out. And the reason being is the non-conference loss to Kentucky, who also is vying for a playoff spot, right? You can look at the college football playoff committee's view on Kentucky, right? They already had them in. Well, Kentucky had a big win against Michigan State. They had a big win against Tennessee, and they had a huge win against number five Florida, okay? They finish out the season against Texas and Louisville. If they're able to beat Texas, there's no way you're taking a Cincinnati team over a Kentucky team. I mean, because you look at the SEC right now, if I was to pick right now with games played right now, the SEC would probably have five teams in. I don't think that's how it's going to shake out because some of them play each other, but there's no way you're going to take a Cincinnati team right now over Kentucky because they played each other. And Kentucky took care of business, okay? And so and it was at Cincinnati too. And so
you got to remember, Lick, you got, before I cut you off there, I'm sorry to hit you, but Florida's banned, right? So they're one of their top teams is out of the SEC. They've lost that fifth team. Who are you putting in?
SEC is still loaded contenders, though.
Between they don't South have seven.
LSU, Texas, Kentucky, Georgia, Alabama, and honestly, Texas A&M, even with three losses, has to be in that mix now with beating Texas the other day.
Yeah, so three losses and no playoff.
But they won't. They won't have five losses. So I've already – obviously, that'll be – we'll just jump right into it next is, you know, we can talk about the SEC. I know we're kind of skipping one, but that's okay. We'll talk about the SEC right now is who's going to win the South. Is that there is the potential, because of the way that the end of the year schedule plays out, is that there could be – six. Oh, I'm not going to count Florida anymore. Okay, so there could be five teams in the SEC that finish with two losses or less. Okay, five teams that finish with two losses or less. So it's going to depend on how Texas's schedule, which is coming to fruition. Right, they lost to Georgia. Texas did, but Georgia already has two losses. If Texas runs the table, Okay. It's the potential for an LSU. When I go back and look, it's going to be it's a three-way tiebreaker, so it's going to depend on how the rankings and stuff shake out. But you're going to potentially have two one-loss teams facing each other in the championship. Obviously, those two teams are going to be a lock. But there's no way that if they run the table that you're not taking an LSU team with only one loss. So, there's three teams right there that are locked into the playoffs. Then you're going to look at those two lost teams. You're going to look at Kentucky, Georgia, Alabama, okay? And you're going to look at those two lost teams. How do you – I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, but they could potentially take five teams in the SEC. If it comes down to Kentucky having two losses, you're taking them over Cincinnati. That's what I'm saying is Kentucky may not make the championship game.
You have to be careful, right? I'm with you. You got to be careful, right? We have Kentucky, Texas coming up.
Yep.
That's an elimination game for Kentucky. If Texas loses, it may be an elimination game unless they can somehow get in at 10-2 and then win the SEC, right? So, there's a lot of tricky parts around there. You look at Georgia Tech coming up on the back end of the side thing too, right? So there's a lot of – again, we talked a lot about upcoming football games that can really cause some troubles for a lot of teams. Alabama is pretty much locked in with their, I would assume, their 10 wins at this point. South Carolina is there. They're probably going to be playing in the championship in that league. The outlier really is Texas. If Texas beats Kentucky and then goes out and wins, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is they're going to kind of still work their way through. LSU, SC, you probably say they're in. Alabama probably in. So let's just say 1, 2, and 3 are in. Well, now what happens if Alabama makes the SEC championship lick? And you know this better than me. Let's say they make the SEC championship and now they lose and they have a third loss. Do they get in over the two-loss Big 12 team? Because I think we're going to see that in the real life CFP, right? Where you may have that three-loss team get bumped out.
I'll say this, though, is that in the past, and I think obviously we'll see it this year, is how much weight this college football playoff committee puts on playing in a conference championship without being a 500 team, right? These teams that have divisions and stuff. But if you're the second best team in which arguably is the best all-around conference, okay, from top to bottom, the best all-around conference, is if you're the second-best team in there and you happen to lose a close game, right? Now, I'm talking about if Alabama plays, I don't care who at the top with one loss, you lose a close game that's probably got a lot of eyes on it. I can't imagine that loss that you took, if you're looking at other 2- and 3-loss teams, doesn't probably weigh a little bit higher factor that you made that conference championship game. I mean, here's the thing, though, is I don't think a 2-loss team is going to make the SEC championship team or game. I think who you're going to see is going to be South Carolina and LSU facing off. And the reason being is that their schedules are very favorable. We don't want to pull a Baylor and end up in a close match against West Virginia here, but I think that it's going to be those two teams playing each other. I think Texas ends up with another loss on the season. But I don't think it's I think you're going to end up with that big old log jam of 2-loss teams in the SEC So if you ask me, I know you said Alabama was a lock. I don't think so.
I think you're right. Yep.
Only reason I say that is when you look who they lost to, who Alabama lost to, and then also if you're going to compare apples to apples with Alabama, is their strength of schedule is worse coming down the stretch. And that's what they're going to remember. This committee is going to remember, who did you just play? And like in your instance, when you play Kansas, it doesn't matter who wins or loses that game. That's what they're going to remember. They're going to remember that game being played. They're not going to remember a game being played in week 3 as much, right? They're going to have to go back and look at it. It won't have big factor, that big pow factor is, these conference championship games will have.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia, I think, is really out, is behind Alabama, right? I mean, I, I, as the SEC commissioner, I think you even look at that and you say that. I don't know. Again, there's some good games still coming up. It'll be very interesting, and I think you're in the same boat. It's where do you put that last 10-2 team in the SEC, and then compare that to the last 10-2 team maybe in the Big 12, and let's just, you know, for goodness sakes, let's just make sure we don't give a third team to say the Big 10 or something like that, because that would just be disgraceful to the CFP.
I mean, that's a good question, though, to bring up, is that obviously with Nebraska coming on strong now, and you have Iowa there, obviously Iowa's going to creep up into that, you know, top five ranking if they continue to win, only because those other teams are playing each other. And, I mean, you have a lot of, you know, one-loss, two-loss teams there, too. And so you really, I mean, it's really going to – we talked about how winning and – like winning means more than losing. We all agreed that a win carries more value than a loss. But eventually, you're going to have to start comparing those non-conference games, because it's the only way to have any comparison between these large conferences. And we talk about large conferences, and I know we don't talk about the ACC that much, but let's jump into the ACC and talk about a wild ride coming down to the end where you have 4 1-loss teams in conference sitting at the top right now. And you have Wake Forest too. They just don't have enough games. And then you have, you know, Virginia Tech, who's been playing great as of late, and NC State. Vegas, what is your take on the ACC?
Well, let's tell you, right? So the ACC are what we thought they were. What we thought they were. We've watched them all year. We've even played their best in Block 1. And who the hell treats Block 1 like it's bullshit? Sometimes you just have to win the games, brother. 0-2 ain't going to cut it. The ACC are who we thought they were. And that's why they're on the outside looking into the CFP after this last rankings. Hey, Block M, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were, and we won't let them off the hook. Wins matter in the NDL. We are who they think they are. A one-team college football playoff conference at best. And who are those teams? Those teams? It's going to come down to Miami, SMU, Cal, Georgia Tech. Va Tech somehow still has a path, which is amazing to me, but still has a path, right? So we've got some big games coming up. We've got Miami versus Georgia Tech. That is a game breaker right there, because Miami cannot afford to lose that game. If for no other reason, that's going to put them at 2 losses. Georgia Tech's going to get the path over them to the ACC playoff, or the ACC championship game. SMU only has Virginia, and they also play Cal, so there's going to be one of those two teams taking a loss somewhere. You know, I think the winner of the Georgia Tech-Miami game is going to secure their spot in the ACC championship. I think maybe the winner of the SMU-Cal game will probably secure their way in as well. Now, if Cal goes out and drops a game to Stanford, or drops a game to Stanford but beats SMU, That's what opens up the door for Virginia Tech, potentially, because the loss and the way the ACC breakdown comes out. So there's some weird things that can happen down the road. I think the worst thing that can happen to the ACC is that they can they end up having a 4-loss total ACC champion. And which is very possible with this current makeup of some of their teams. Miami, yes. They lost to Florida. They lost to Bama in Block 1. They lost to FSU later down the road. SMU's got some tough losses. Losing to Duke, that's ugly, man. Losing to Tulane, who doesn't have a lick of defense, that's ugly. And then lost to TCU, who really should continue to be a top 25 ranked team with their strength of schedule that they have. So there's lots of moving parts. Cal probably has the easiest path with Wake, Syracuse, Stanford, and then just gets to play SMU because they control it all on their end. But it'll definitely be interesting as we come down the stretch. And then where do the rankings come into play, right? With all the talk and the chatter and eyeballs on the ACC in the last week, has the rest of the league taken notice? Are they paying more attention? Are they looking at some of the things that are happening? All of a sudden, is there going to be an overcorrection in the rankings? And if we randomly see Miami in the top 10, well, it just doesn't make sense. They've got 3 losses. They don't belong there, right? But, you know, I know they moved up in my ranking, right? Just based on what they're currently doing, as they are the best team in that conference. But in my opinion, they still needed some help, and Memphis gave it to them. So we shall see.
I think the conference is still in serious trouble. I think the only conference champion, even as teams stand now, that's a lock to get in if they went out would be Cal with two losses. But if Cal wins out, they may not even make it to the ACC championship game, because if Miami and Georgia Tech also went out, I believe they both end up in front of the Bears. And even if you're sitting at 10-2, but didn't win the conference, I don't think that's necessarily good enough to get Cal into the playoff. So right now, as I stand, I don't think the ACC is going.
Yeah, ACC, I think how much of a mess has been, I don't think it's done yet. I think there's still going to be chaos inside that conference. But I do think SMU comes away alone out of that conference. I think that's the only team I see, especially with how they've been playing lately. But like you said, especially Vegas and y'all, Miami does play Georgia Tech. And we know how usually that game goes in the past. So just watch out for Georgia Tech there as well.
Yeah, I think, I'm with you guys there. Is that, has the ACC been dogged on this year? Yeah, but, it's rightfully so. And the reason I say that is that, you have several teams that just have failed to get games in, which makes it tough when your middle of the pack isn't playing games, because it's really tough to see the body of work, right? And we're starting to see it. I think the only way, there's just no potential for two ACC teams to get in unless Cal runs the table, plays in the ACC championship, and so does Miami. And maybe Cal loses a close game to Miami. Potentially you could put two teams in, but you'd have to have other dominoes fall. Like, you'd have to have, like, the Mountain West trip up in Wyoming, and I just bring Wyoming because they're a two-loss team, beat San Diego State. Is you're probably going to take, you may take an ACC team over them. But I don't know, because the playoff committee has viewed Mountain West as just an overall better conference than the ACC. They both played about the same non-conference schedule, which wasn't very great. And their only common denominator was Stanford. And Stanford's biggest loss of the year was to a Mountain West team in San Diego State. And so I don't know that ACC can get two teams in. I think there is a possibility, but lots of things would have to fall into place. And you'd probably have to have Miami and Cal face each other in the championship with Miami winning. And then you'd end up with, two, three lost teams in the conference. But I think probably the scenario... you could potentially see where they may not even get a team, though, if SMU ends up where, one of these teams ends up beating each other, and then you have a three or their best team being four losses after the championship game, you could potentially not have a team in the ACC. And because you also have the Sun Belt, who is obviously the whole reason we're here and stuff for game day, is that you potentially could have one of them run the table, win the Sun Belt Conference, and then they enter the picture, to steal that bid over a three or four loss ACC team. And so I think that, like we've always said, there's so much football to be played.
I've got to say, I hear what you're saying, but I think the odds, regardless of what else happens, of a team like Cal with three losses losing the ACC title game and getting into the playoffs, I think the odds are better that my wife comes to me this afternoon, tells me that Salma Hayek and Scarlett Johansson are going to come live with us and share our bed for the rest of my life. I think the odds are greater of that.
Well, there you have it. Straight out of the word. So we'll just, obviously we could probably beat the dead horse here, is that there's still lots of football to be played next week. It'll probably be completely different because we're going to have teams lose that we didn't expect to lose, such as Memphis. Knocking themselves out of the college football. And we'll get to talk about that new playoff. The second playoff committee release will be on Monday, which will be great because we'll really start to see how that committee and that war room is really viewing some of these wins, as well as are they putting any weight on a loss and how much weight are they putting on losses. And then obviously the more games that get played makes it easier for them to start evaluating those games. And so next we'll kind of start to get into the picks of the week here. You know, and it, so far this season, as you can tell, when we transition over here to the NDL College Game Day picks, you know, we've been keeping track. Is Penguin is obviously making a big old push here for leading this. I know I told some of you guys that we had someone donate a $100 gift card to whoever won the NDL College Game Day pick'em for this season. Now, Penguin, with you like living on off the grid with no power and stuff, are you guys like allowed to go out to steakhouses and eat dinner?
I honestly don't even know where the closest steakhouse is, but I can see cows from where I'm sitting right now, so I tend to make my own steaks here. So, but I could use that money to buy whiskey.
There you go. So it'd be a $100 whiskey card to eat your cows out there on the pasture. So the first game that we'll talk about this week is obviously we'll go right back into the SEC. We already talked about how big this matchup is, Texas at Kentucky. What are your thoughts on this one, Penguin?
Well, it's a huge matchup, and like we mentioned earlier, the loser here is probably on the outside looking in, even if they went out. Texas, you know they've got a great coaching staff and steam there. Went to the Natty last season, tons of speed, but we all saw they got smoked, not just lost, smoked by Georgia this week. And that really showed their vulnerability if they get in a spot where they are forced to throw the ball. Now they're going to Kentucky, who on the other side has won 8 straight games. And along that, they beat Michigan State, Cincinnati, the aforementioned Gators. They've got a lot of momentum. Their defense is playing great. And I think the defense is going to keep playing great. They're going to turn the Longhorns over, and the Wildcats are going to win this game. Phony?
Yeah, you made really good points there. So, yeah, Kentucky's been might be one of the hottest teams in the NDL right now with those big wins especially. And the big thing, too, they've got Texas at home in this game. So with how hot they've been and them being at home, that crowd, that student section is going to be insane in this game, I think. It's going to cause problems for Texas's offense. I think Kentucky wins this game, and I think Texas is going to be, might be one of those teams looking out and trying to sneak into the playoffs. So I'm going Wildcats in this game.
Yeah, this is definitely has the big possibility to be a loser out game. This is definitely, we already hit on it, a playoff game for Kentucky, which I think matters, right? I think that matters when you know that you're out if you lose. We're sitting there with 2 losses on the season. They're both conference losses. Texas still would have some wiggle room to potentially get into the playoff because they'll play a powerful Florida team. Then they'll play Wake Forest out of the ACC as well as Texas A&M, who, let me mind you, just came off a huge upset of South Carolina, sitting there with 3 losses, still has a window to put in an argument that they could be a 3-loss team that would make the playoff. If they were to finish strong here with wins over Texas and South Carolina. Anyways, Texas didn't look good against Georgia, a team that Kentucky also played in week 2. Kentucky's kind of been hit or miss for me this season. I've been really high on them, and then they seem to let me down when I get high on them. I think the Gavin Wimsatt is going to his play down the stretch here is going to be big. I think Kentucky's front 4 really gets it going against Texas, which will cause some issues. I think Texas likes to play a little bit slower. I really just think that home crowd is going to be the difference in the game. Texas falls on the road here.
Yeah, listen, if this game was played in Austin, I'd be taking Texas. And I'm going to kind of, hopefully Barkley maybe saves us here, but I might give us the whammy. I'm taking Kentucky at home. Being able to make adjustments at the line, being able to not feed into the home crowd as Texas can make a lot of things happen in the front 4. I like Kentucky to play a safe game. This is a win game for both of them. Kentucky loses, they're out. I think Texas, with their upcoming schedule, if they lose this game, they're out. This is definitely going to be one of the most watched games of NDL SEC season, but I'm taking Kentucky at home.
No, Vegas, I agree 1,000%. I think if this game was played in Texas, it'll be a different story. Texas does play good defense overall to me. But however, Kentucky just has been red hot, winning 8 straight, as you guys mentioned, 372 points forward too. So they're scoring a lot of points, getting 40, 60, 50 plus. I mean, I don't know. They can get very dangerous today, led by, you know, their wide receiver core of Key, Brown, and Macklin. I mean, these guys are really doing something special over there. So I'm going with Kentucky as well. I think they go ahead and get the W today. Go Wildcats.
And so, I mean, it really sounds like Steam's facing the gauntlet here down the stretch too, with some of these games. Next up, I know we talk about the ACC. I know right now in the chat right now, it's Block's really hyping up the ACC, which we love. We love you guys' feedback and stuff. This is a big matchup when it comes down to how it's going to shake out. NC State obviously faltering, you know, the other night, as well as Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech at NC State.
Well, it's a playoff game for Georgia Tech, really. I mean, I don't think they're getting in, but still, this is obviously a must-win game if they're going to keep any playoff hopes alive, let alone ACC title hopes. On the flip side, NC State, you know, Coach Narkan's taking them to bowl eligibility, but this is a team that has given up 30-plus points 40 times this season, and versus Georgia Tech, that's known for their offense, this will be the fifth time they give up 30-plus. In fact, I think they give up at least 40 in this. I think the Ramblin' Wreck rolls over the Wolfpack.
Yeah, I'm right on board with you, Penguin. Georgia Tech's offense is going to be too much in this game for the Wolfpack to handle. North Carolina State has been struggling as of late. I think Georgia Tech comes away with this in a big win here by 20.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia Tech's definitely faltered in the last two games. They lost against Notre Dame, Virginia Tech. I think that that momentum is kind of going downward. We were really high on them earlier in the season. I think any more losses, obviously you can count them out here. They just really haven't figured out how to play any defense this year. When you really look at that, I know we've talked about that before. The joy here is that I think Coach Narkan really, right, them and the Wolfpack right now are struggling on the offensive side of the ball. I think that they were nearly blanked against the Blue Devils the other day in the Tobacco Road rivalry game. I just think Georgia Tech's going to come out and finally play a full game on both sides of the ball, and the Yellow Jackets are going to sting the Wolfpack.
Yeah, hate to beat a dead horse here, but it's the offense in Georgia Tech. NC State is not good defensively, and by not good, that's being friendly. Georgia Tech's one major downfall outside of their pitiful, dreadful defense is turning the ball over. If they can just figure out how to protect the ball just a little bit more, rotate those running backs in there as they have quite the combo, and continue to feed the beast that is their tight end, I do think Georgia Tech has a really good shot here of having a really good week, not only knocking down NC State, but also shocking the world and causing big chaos against Miami.
I think that's great points that's been mentioned. I think with NC State, they're one of those teams where, you know, you want to make sure that you have to be good on one side of the football, whether you want to be good offensively and bad defensively, or good defensively and bad offensively. I think NC State has both of those problems. Georgia Tech, however, you know, offensively, you know, to the points you guys mentioned, they can score, they can do some good things on offense, and I think that that's, you know, going to bring them a W, along with the fact that, you know, these guys need to win just in case if they can try to make this next step in their journey. So I'm going Georgia Tech by a quarter mile.
And the clean sweep there with Georgia Tech. You know, and then we're going to go into a completely different conference, one we haven't talked about much is this year. We do have a really big in-conference matchup between Jacksonville State and Sam Houston. What do you have, Penguin?
Well, Jacksonville State is another one of those teams that had a rough start to the season. They were actually 0-3 at one point and have won their last 5. And in those losses, you've got New Mexico State and Iowa State, which are teams with a combined 16-4 record. So Jacksonville State's honestly probably a lot better than the record indicates. On the flip side, Sam Houston, if you looked at their touchdown to interception ratio, it's 7-31 between their two quarterback system. That spells trouble. I think Jacksonville State goes in and coasts to a road win here.
Yeah, right there with you again, Penguin. Jacksonville State has been playing really good football lately. Their defense has been playing lights out. When you go watch their last couple games, I think their defense comes up big here in this game as well, especially against that rough Sam Houston State offense. I think they're going to commit a lot of turnovers and come away in a big win here and look ahead to claiming that conference title game later in the season. So I'm going to Jacksonville State.
Yeah, when you look at Jacksonville State, they're potentially one touchdown and a two-point conversion away from being talked about as a possibly ranked team. They have losses to New Mexico and Iowa State. That loss to New Mexico was by 7. They've ran the table in Conference USA so far this season. I'm not sure that Coach Shark is going to be able to hang with the Gamecocks here for all the reasons that you mentioned. I think on offense, they turn the ball over way too much to be able to be competitive in any conference for a championship. I really do have Jacksonville State winning big here.
Yeah, there's nothing that makes me more upset than picking against Sam Houston State here. But unfortunately, despite having a tremendous playbook at their arsenal and having some actual pretty decent players, including a very, 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 very fast wide receiver that can do some damage, Sam Houston State is going to take the L, and most likely it won't be close. We are definitely looking forward to that the upcoming game, though. There, it looks like there's a showdown that with Jacksonville State and Liberty pending eventually, eh?
Yeah, I have Jacksonville State. You know, these guys, honestly, to the point you guys mentioned, and have a stronghold on the conference, man, with a 5-0 record. Their loss is only to Iowa State. You know, Sam Houston, to me, is still trying to find itself. 0-3, you know, record at home, 2-5 overall. I think Jacksonville State go ahead and take this one, 38-24.
Another clean sweep there. It looks like we're all on the same page here for the most part today, which is always either good or really bad. We give a lot of those teams some locker room material. We're going to jump over to a conference we talked about a little bit earlier, Penn State and Maryland. Obviously, this has really big implications when it comes to who potentially could see themselves in that conference championship, as well as Penn State still has dreams and hopes of making that college football championship. Penguin, who do you have?
Well, Penn State definitely is still alive. Drew Allard has done a lot through the air this season. One shy of 30 touchdowns and over 3,000 yards through the air. Whereas Maryland on the other side, you know, Coach Brady there, you know he's going to bring a tough running game, as they've got four different running backs with all over 170 yards. And they played one of the tougher schedules in the nation to this point. But they've got the home field in this point. Penn State, despite having a great defense and just really more talent overall, have to go on the road in this one. And they turn over the ball a decent bit. For that reason, I think Maryland digs deep, wins this game. That's going to be look like a drunken boxing match.
Yeah, when we're looking at this game, this is a tough one for me to decide on. Maryland struggled this season a little bit, kind of surprised bit and stuff with the new coach that came into this team this season. They've had a tough schedule. Playing, they're going to play Penn State at Iowa coming up. They've already played Oregon, LSU, SMU, MSU. Like, they've had a tough schedule, tough road to kind of where they're at now. Game here at home against Penn State. I just think Penn State's talents is going to be a little too much for the Terrapins. I think Penn State squeaks by here in a close one.
Yeah, Penn State's won the last 8 of 9 games they played. This game is a must-win for them to either have a shot at that college football playoff as well as their own championship. Maryland's such a run-heavy offense against that balanced attack of Penn State. I think the real big edge is going to come down to the quarterback play, which has already been talked about with Drew Aller. He's going to break that 30 interception mark in this game, I do believe. Maryland's going to be able to pound the ball, not turn the ball over, play smart football. And then obviously being at home, that's going to play right into that game plan. I think Maryland comes out ahead, and you're going to see a pretty defeated Penn State team here.
Yeah, we've all heard of Beamer Bowl down there in Vautech land and now South Carolina. Well, what Maryland's going to bring you is Brady Bowl. And what that is going to be run up the middle, run to the left, run to the right, and then run straight over you again and rinse and repeat. Penn State's got some hosses up there on the front four. They've got a tremendous linebackers. If Brady can control the ball like he wants to, can prevent the costly fumble, because I don't necessarily think he's going to put the ball in the air too much. I think Maryland pulls this game off. They are probably slightly an underdog at home, but not having to play at Penn State, which is trouble. I think Brady pulls it off to knock Penn State out of the Big Ten championship picture.
What about you, Barkley?
These are two teams, great point, Vegas. These are two teams that are, you know, honestly going in two opposite directions. Maryland started off early with two big wins against USC and Minnesota. That was good for them. As you mentioned, they have a run-heavy offense, but however, back-to-back losses, you know, have really kind of crippled this team. Being 5-4 overall, I mean, you know, this may can do something for their confidence going into next season, but we're just going to have to see about that. Penn State, however, third in Big Ten rankings. I mean, these guys are just rolling. So, Penn State, go ahead for the W for me. Nittany Lions for the win.
Go, we're on a couple different pages there. That should be a great matchup. Kind of stick with that theme in that conference. Obviously, a matchup many have been looking forward to the entire season. Nebraska's coach up and left and retired. Mid-season after a very successful season last year. You know, I think it looks like they found their replacement for this year. Iowa at Nebraska. Who do you have?
Well, this is always a big time battle in the heartland there. Iowa, I was selling stock on them earlier in the season when they lost to Iowa State badly. But since then, they've been perfect. Put up over 2,000 yards rushing already. And they have not given up more than 24 points a game in that 9-game win streak. Nebraska, on the flip side, has got a new staff, but we know it's a high-powered offense. That has the least this team has put up this season is 39 points. So, you know, something's got to give in this one. And even though we're on the road at Nebraska, I'm full-on believer in Iowa and that their defense will travel well. So I've got the Hawkeyes winning just a slugfest with 20 points will be enough to take the win today.
This is a big game for both teams. Just like Luke said a little bit ago, interim coach over at Nebraska. Don't really know much about him yet. He did get a win in his first game as interim coach. So it's gonna be exciting to kind of see what he does with this Nebraska team in a big game like this. But I just think Iowa's too hot, that especially with how well their offense has played this year and how great that defense is. I think it's going to be hard for anybody to beat this Iowa team with how good they're playing on offense. I'm going Iowa here in this game, but I think it'll be closer than what people expect.
Yeah, this has all the makings for one of those, like, all the marbles types of games, with both teams coming in with only one loss, and they were both early in the season. Both teams are wanting to enter that Big Ten championship game, as well as keep that top seed for this conference intact. I know Nebraska has some games to be played here, but they really came out, start swinging with that new coach and the new staff there with a big dub. Now, this Big Ten's really going to start heating up. We've already talked about that. I think the Corn Huskers are going to upset the Hawkeyes, and they're going to have really big airs, big plays through the air. They're going to force Iowa into very uncomfortable waters, and Iowa's going to have to start putting the ball through the air and downfield, and I think you're going to start seeing some mistakes. I have Nebraska.
Yeah, this this one's tough. Again, anytime you get a new owner in the league and there's no video anything along the way, it's always a little bit tougher. You know, the new Nebraska coach, E-Dub, does come from one of my previous other leagues that I'm in, and we're excited to have him here. I think he landed in a great spot for him to be able to show what he can do. This is definitely going to be a testing moment for E-Dub with Riola, with the Nebraska Cornhuskers. I am taking Iowa. I'm taking Iowa because Iowa cannot lose this game. If Iowa loses this game, they may have just knocked themselves out of the college football playoff if they do not go out and find a way to actually win the whole thing in the Big Ten. Like, this is the KO game that can really, really hurt them. If they would win this, they buy themselves maybe a loss in the Big Ten championship and be okay. So I am taking Iowa, and I expect them to lean on that run game and lean on it heavy.
This is one of those games where you grab your popcorn, you grab your favorite drink or beverage, and you sit back and no distractions and you lock in. This game has so much implications. It's fantastic. Iowa, you know, being 9-0, playing well, as you guys mentioned, you know, losing to Iowa State early. And they also won some close games, too, as well. Nebraska is high-powered. Being able to put points on the board, having this new coach is going to be very interesting to see what he brings as well moving forward. I started with Iowa. I started with Iowa, but you know what, Lake? I think I'm going to go with you and pull a lead course. I'm switching my mascot. I'm going with Nebraska. I think they're going to go ahead and put some points on the board. I think they edge it out today.
I like it. I love it. And something to think about, too, is sometimes if we never really look into this, real life versus our league, is that the last three matchups in the NDL between these two, right? They're play. It's a rivalry game. Nebraska-Iowa rivalry game. It's called the Heroes Trophy. Is the last three matchups in the NDL, season 29, 28, 27, this game was decided by less than 4 points in every single one of those games. Last season, 49-45, Nebraska over Iowa. And so we're expecting a very close game. I think it's going to be exciting and really kind of paint that picture for that conference as well as most of these other games. The next game that we're going to get into is the 119th meeting of this game. This is referred to as the game by most fans, Michigan-Ohio State. Really talking about two-story programs. Michigan and Ohio State both have the most and the third most wins in college football history when we're talking about D1. This rivalry game gathered profound national interest as this game normally determines the Big Ten conference title, which is usually results in a Rose Bowl game matchup, as well as the outcome of the college football playoff. In 2000, this game was labeled as the greatest North American sports rivalry ever. I think any of us from a sports, I don't like either team, but from a sports perspective, as I understand and I respect the rivalry and how big it is. And normally it has giant implications when you're talking about the, you know, the playoffs and bowl games. This season, not so much. Ohio State at Michigan. Who do you have, Penguin?
Well, you're right. It is a huge game, regardless of the record. And there are two big matchups that I'm looking at this game here. That Michigan defensive front versus an Ohio State offense that has struggled to do much this season. And then the explosive wide receiver Walker, the Wolverines, versus the vaunted Ohio State secondary. Whoever wins, those two matchups are going to decide this game. I went back and forth. You've got the home field for Michigan. You've got Ohio State, who I think is deeper in talent. But I've got to look at Ohio State's schedule and see how they fared against other good teams this season. And they've lost again and again and again. Michigan State, Iowa, Oregon, they're all good teams, but Iowa State is also a good team and should win those games, and they just aren't this season. For that reason, the Wolverines are going to walk away with a huge rivalry win in this one.
Yeah, as much as I don't think I've ever done this in my life, I think this might be the first time I'm doing this and probably the last time, hopefully. But I just think Michigan is going to control the line on both sides, and I think that's what it's going to come down to. I'm going Wolverines. This goes against everything I believe in, but I'm going Wolverines in this game.
Yeah, I mean, when I really looked at this game, I think these teams are evenly matched right now this season. I think last season, if you were to ask, it would be a no-brainer for me. If you look at the last three matchups of these teams in the NDL, is Ohio State's dominated the last three games. And you really look at the last 10 games, is the same story, as Ohio State's just really dominated in the NDL. I think you'd have to go back to the inception of the NDL to find where Michigan put together a streak where they're better than Ohio State. This may not have much of that big game feel as it has in the past, but hey, don't tell these two coaches that, because that's not how they're treating it. Coach Siet there may be playing for his job in Ohio State, right? Isn't that a complete 360 when we're thinking about last season making the playoff? Is that Coach Siet could be playing for his job in Ohio State? I know they have high expectations around here. A lot of people in the league and in the media think that he could be on the hot seat. Right now, he's really battling to become bowl eligible, which is crazy to think about. Michigan on the other side, they're really hoping to finish their season strong and try to make a case for that college football playoff. It's not completely out of the realm for him to have some type of an argument at the end of the season if Michigan's able to run the table, win the big game, and then win their, you know, have a chance to play in their to be that inside-outside team. Obviously, lots of dominoes need to fall in their place. I think Ohio State, though, has way too much firepower in this game on the ground. I think Judkins steals the show in the big house, and I think the Buckeyes are going to win.
Yeah, I had this game marked as a University of Michigan win pretty much all year. And for the most part, it was mainly set because – it's probably the only way the Michigan Wolverines are going to beat the Ohio State Buckeyes in the year of 2024. But that being said, I sit here and I loved your take, Lick, and I was thinking more about it, is that Ohio State's playing for their life. And yeah, there's been some changes in Michigan. Freak's been playing better, but they're playing for their team. These two teams did play last year. And I'm going to take the Buckeyes. It'll be a tough one, but I think the Buckeyes pull this one out.
I'm going Michigan. I think that Michigan defense goes ahead and rolls over the offensive line of the Ohio State Buckeyes. Michigan has just been playing too well. They still have a lot to play for. Ohio State, I think, still is trying to figure it out. A close game, 34-31. Michigan.
There you go. We're kind of a little bit of mix and match there, which I love. Next up, we got a rivalry game, right? The battle on the bayou, the whole reason we're here in Monroe. It's been a great show. Crowd's been great. A great host city. I didn't have to travel very far. I literally had to drive 10 minutes across the river, which has been great. The family will really enjoy that. This is one of those matchups that we could talk and talk and talk about, really being a marquee matchup for this conference. The Sun Belt also shining some light on some of these smaller conferences throughout the season that really do have some great matchups and stuff. Penguin, what do you got here for this matchup?
Well, it's as big as a Sun Belt game probably has ever gotten. I mean, both these teams with everything to play for, not just the division, not just the conference, but legitimate playoff aspiration. Given that, I think the home field's going to matter. I think team speed's going to matter. And both of those are in favor of the Raging Cajuns. So I think Louisiana takes this one, runs past UL Monroe in a just burner I think the over-under in this game, I think at least 80 points combined will be put up in this one.
Yeah. Raging Cajun's offense has been really, really good this season for them, averaging over 40 points a game. Defense, on the other hand, giving up about 30-some points a game as well. And when you go look at the Monroe Warhawks, right, their defense has been lights out. They've held their opponents under 20 points a game in every game besides one, and they only gave up 30 points. But their offense has been really good as well. But they have to go on the road here against the Raging Cajuns in a big matchup, right? And in the last 15 matchups, they've only won three times. I think this is going to be a tough task for ULM. I'm going Raging Cajuns in a high-scoring matchup, but Raging Cajuns sneaking out with this win.
Yeah, Louisiana comes in ranked 25th in the nation behind a very potent offense, averaging over 40 points a game. The Raging Cajuns run a dual quarterback system, with Wooldridge being the passer and Field being the runner. I think it's been very effective for them this year. They've combined for over 10 touchdowns, very minimal turnovers. Coach Barkley and the Warhawks have done it a little differently. They come in playing defense early in the season. They had a big win over Troy. 49-31 a week five here in Monroe. As much as I would love to pick my hometown Warhawks, I just think that Doof has that offense firing on all cylinders right now. And I think they're going to be holding up the battle of the trophy.
Yeah, the best part about these games, especially in the Sun Belt, some of these small games, it's going to come down to who the better team is on that day. It's not going to come down to any home field advantage antics, if that makes any sense. I do think that you get a little bit of a slight edge at home, but it's not going to come down to not being able to see a receiver icon or having not being able to make a hot route or audible. So that being said, I'm going with my boy Barkley. Barkley and I have been with each other for several years in regards to the EA football landscape. I know how he plays. I'm super excited that he was able to grab a team. I would love to see him get some more games played, especially big matchups, for example, with some other teams that are on his schedule. But in this game right here, I'm going to give the nod to the ULM Warhawks, and I expect them to move into the top 25 after this win.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
What about you, Barkley? Putting you on the hot seat. You got a pick here.
I mean, you know, to be honest with you, you know, this team, both of these teams are great. You know, Coach Doof has been doing a fantastic job down there. But offense that he has is fantastic. As I mentioned earlier, the defense hits as well. Very physical, phenomenal as well. Listen, we're just looking to, you know, play some time of possession, get a couple first downs, and we're going to see what it is. I got to go with us. Warhawks, we're gonna play some games and see how we come out. So it's gonna be a good game.
Man, I'm excited, and we'll get that start time to you guys out in the league. I know they're planning on, at least Doof was planning on being back from traveling, and they were gonna play this morning. We'll get that time to you. I really appreciate the show as always. A big shout out to Homie. He does a lot of the behind the scenes stuff for us graphic wise and gets those things to me for the show, as well as our new intro song. If you didn't hear it, you got to go back and listen to it. It's amazing. I can't tell you who did it. They don't want me to release their name, but I'll tell you what, I think it's really great that you guys are really buying into what we do on this show. We absolutely love coming on here and being able to talk NDL and college football games with you. Does anyone else have any parting words today?
I'm convinced it's actually you rapping in the video. I'm pretty sure that's the big secret.
I have zero musical talent.
Exactly what you would say to throw me off the scent, but I think it's a great job. No, I think it's be a great week, great time, and yeah.
I also wanted to add, I just wanted to thank you guys so much for the invite. The show was phenomenal today. I also want to thank Coach Vegas for giving me a call to get an opportunity to be a part of this wonderful league and organization. I'm looking forward to all the matchups. We got some fire today, so make sure everybody have your streams ready. Let's go.
Yeah, it's been great having you, Barkley. I know you have a big game coming ahead. Always great to be here in Louisiana. So I think this game between Barkley and Doof can be big. Everybody's going to need to tune in and kind of see what happens, especially in the G5 matchup. So
Vegas, anything?
Listen, always a pleasure. I know the amount of work it takes to pull this together and the amount of time that you put in for it. So thanks so much for being here. Just a friendly reminder, guys, it's all for fun, right? Sometimes you need to have a little villain in order to make it a little bit more interesting. If you got some sand in your underpants, well, ask yourself, what can you do differently? That's all I got for you, brother. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, take care, guys. Until next week, don't forget we're live at Kansas, Baylor, Kansas next week. Potential 1-2 going at it. NDL signing off.